Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 133. World Work. January 18th, 2008. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
We come in, and the people, to begin with, already are against us. They're against facilitation. And I remember starting out saying something about trying to be open to everything that's present and also open to conflict. And this man gets up and he says, "You say that, it's a trick to convince us that we should trust you. I don't trust you. You just say that, you don't really mean it." I remember I said, "No, I mean it because I do mean it." And then the man says to me, "Well, let me tell you something. I want to kill my neighbor. I want to kill his wife, and I want to rape his daughter, and I want to do that now. And if I say that, are you still standing with me and say you accept it at face value?" And I remember saying, "Yes, yes, because that you want to do that must be part of your history. It doesn't come out of nowhere." And the guy starts to sob and weep and say, "I wasn't like that. I wasn't like that. I had a family. It's horrible what that whole thing has done to me."
That was the voice of my guest, Dr. Max Schupbach, describing his facilitation mediation work in a refugee camp. Max Schupbach, PhD, is the president of Max FXX Incorporated, which is based in Portland, Oregon. He uses a facilitative approach in his work as a consultant, executive-level coach, trainer, and public speaker. According to his website, and I'll quote at some length here, "Organizational transformation, personal growth, and professional development are inseparable. These disciplines need not be taught. They are inherent in our natures. World work is an approach that connects individuals and organizations to that natural innate tendency and supports personal and collective awareness for discovering emerging directions." Max is a certified process worker and a senior faculty member of the Process Work Center of Portland. He is part of the original group that founded the first Process Work Centers in Switzerland and the United States, and has co-founded process work training programs in over 15 countries in Asia, Africa, Europe, Australia, and North America. The vast diversity of his clientele includes Fortune 100 corporations and small businesses, large NGOs and local grassroots movements, and government agencies and political parties. He conducts a master facilitation course for individual consultants and consulting groups such as PricewaterhouseCoopers. Max coaches executive-level managers of business and nonprofit organizations, as well as politicians running for and holding state and federal offices. He also facilitates community building among indigenous groups in Australia and North America, and in spiritual groups of various denominations. He has facilitated conflict resolution sessions in many different environments, such as maximum security prisons, Yugoslavian refugee camps with Serbians and Croats, and once in a standoff between squatters and the police. Max is also the founder and president of CityWork, an organization that facilitates world work processes in connection with urban development in a variety of ways, for example, by creating alliances between corporations, city administration, disenfranchised groups, and other stakeholders. Presently, he is researching and teaching methods for applying world work for strategy, development, and implementation in association with several business schools. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Max Schupbach, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, as you know, I recently conducted an interview on process work with your friend and colleague, Dr. Julie Diamond. And she, she gave us a kind of introductory overview of process work and a little bit of the history of how it was developed by Arnie Mindell, who I'll be interviewing in August. But to tell you the truth, I'm still not sure I've quite got it. So before we get into the world work, maybe we can start out with your version of what process work is and how you got into it.
Okay, well, I've only been part of this for the past, 30 years, so I'm not sure I quite got it either.
Okay.
So we'll have to see what we come up between the two of us.
Okay.
Well, you know, one of the things is that process work is, it started out definitely as a psychological therapeutic model, as you know, or as I'm sure you've heard from Julie, that was rooted, among other things, in Jungian psychology.
Yeah, is it 30 years old, though?
Yeah, I think it's about in the 25, 30 years. You
okay.
Know? I think the development of the dream body must be around about 25, 30 years old.
Okay, good. Well, go on. I'm sorry, I cut in. So
No. I like cutting in.
Okay, good.
So originally, it definitely was like a therapeutic module, but I don't know if that came across in your earlier interview. At this point, it's like a wide spectrum type of paradigm that is looking at how we use psychology, physics, how various sciences, and how, for example, indigenous thinking and anthropological concepts are connected with each other. So it's sort of like a big framework that actually does allow for a lot of individual interpretation and specialization in various fields. So that's one of the reasons why it's not easy to get one's head around right away.
Yes, I keep trying to understand, well, how is it different than, you know, trying to compare it to other things like Gestalt therapy or...
Right.
You know, or a Jungian approach to dream work or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Now, how did you get into it?
Well, I was way back in, I'm Swiss originally.
Okay.
And Arnie was teaching at the Jung Institute in Zurich. And I met Arnie just about around the time when he started to develop the first process-oriented concepts.
Uh-huh.
And... I had a dream early on in my work with him as his client about hanging out in an alchemical laboratory together. And
this was an actual nighttime dream.
Yeah, nighttime dream.
Yeah, okay.
And I was assisting. Arnie in an alchemical process. I don't know how familiar you are with Jungian psychology. It's a big thing among Jungians.
Yeah, I'm pretty familiar, so I'm definitely, we've talked about Tarot on these shows, so I think most of my listeners will have some familiarity with the idea of alchemy, alchemical transformation.
Well, I was not familiar with it at all, so, you know, I blue-eyed into that session and said, well, I dreamt that there was like a bunch of various metals and we were mixing those together and trying to make gold out of it.
Mm.
And then Arnie said, well, who knows, you might end up like doing something like therapy one day. And I thought to myself, yeah, I'm sure you guys, you psychologists, you say that to everybody. So that's how I got into it.
Now you have a PhD. What's your PhD in?
In veterinary medicine.
Oh, and did you have that at the time that you were seeing him?
No. I was at the time interested in sociology especially. So I studied sociology and psychology. I don't know if you're familiar with that. At the time in the European therapeutic training system, the therapy modules or the therapy schools like the Jung Institute and the Freud Institute and academic psychology were actually two different tracks.
Yes.
So you couldn't study therapeutic models at the university, and all these groups like the Jung Institute, Zurich, whatever, they only required that, or only, they required that you had an academic degree of any sort, because at the time they were interested in scientific diversity. So I thought, oh, I want to study something. I was interested in biology and medicine. That makes me more rooted in nature as a whole, because I'll be dealing enough with people psychology later. So that was a really great decision. I think that's one of the better ones in my life.
Well, your dream really turned out to be predictive, didn't it? Because you have ended up working with Arnie Mandel.
Ever since.
Yeah, in doing transformative processes, alchemical processes.
True.
Yeah. So then I guess somehow your involvement with him sort of got you involved then in working with people. You had a degree in veterinary medicine, so you kind of shifted from working with animals to working with the human animal?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. Before I was working with the people in animals, and then afterwards I worked with the animal in people. No, I'm just kidding.
So, well, tell us about world work. You know, it's such an ambitious sounding term, as if you expected to transform the whole world, which, you know, could be a good thing, but it sounds like an overwhelming project. So tell us about world work.
Okay, well, if you'll allow me, I'd like to go one step back, because you asked something about process work to begin with.
Okay, good.
So if I like to, I like to say, there's so many ways how you can describe process work as a whole. But if I can say two sentences about that, because I think that'll lead up to saying, to talking more about the world work.
You can say even more than two sentences.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, one of the ways you can look at process work, or an important part in process work, the more recent development, let's say like in the last 10 years or so, is Arnie's book Quantum Mind, where he pulls aspects of quantum physics together with psychology. An important part in that whole theory there is the role of observer. I'm sure that you're familiar with Newton, in which the observer, in a sense, didn't play a big role. There was like an objective, it was considered there was a objective static framework in which events happened.
Yes.
And you could measure these objective events by coming from that particular framework. And as we all know, then Einstein changed that and said, well, there actually isn't a static framework on the outside, but these frameworks are relative to each other. What we perceive is always relative to our own framework. And that has changed a lot of how we think psychologically about the world, about each other. I think especially a country like the United States, that's really in a way built on diversity, has a much deeper understanding of how all these frameworks are like relative.
Mm-hmm.
But then quantum mechanics says something else, which is that in a sense, the event, the method of observation of the event and the observer are, in a sense, one big, indistinguishable soup.
Yes.
And that the event itself has a non-local character, can have a non-local character, but also the observer can have a non-local character. And the main thing in that aspect, or in that regard, that for me comes out of the quantum mind, is the understanding that the observer speak awareness, speak facilitation, is a built-in process, so that awareness and events are connected, and we find awareness everywhere we go, in all areas. And we just have to facilitate that already present awareness of the groups or people that we work with. And that is sort of a self-organizing process that we further.
So when you talked about...
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I mean, certainly I'm aware, and I'm sure many listeners would be aware of the Heisenberg principle of uncertainty that you were referring to earlier. And when you talk about facilitating awareness in a group, how would you go about doing that?
So in a sense, you can say process work, in my viewpoint, what process work does, it facilitates awareness. It facilitates awareness with individuals. And facilitate means making it easier for the person to understand how they are using their awareness and how they're using their consciousness. And we do the same thing with groups.
Okay.
So for example, we differentiate between different levels or different awareness styles. We have one awareness style that is focused on consensus reality. Consensus reality is a term that Charles Tart, the transpersonal psychologist, coined.
Yes, I interviewed him, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
A wonderful person.
Yes.
And so that's the idea that what is real is actually a social consensus that depends on the time and the place where you are. So the one, at the moment, a preferred way of thinking about what's real is that we think what we agree on is what is real, is it's measurable and therefore objective. For example, if you and me say we start our interview at 10 o'clock, that's we would call that consensus reality time.
Yes.
And we say, the interview might go for a length of like 30 minutes. That's a consensus reality period of time. But then the subjective experience of that time, like some listeners might be here and listen to these 30 minutes, and they might be over very quickly because they're interested in some of those topics. And other listeners might think that has been a long, long time because their particular views were less represented or explained or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Good example. That's a good example.
Yeah, so that's like a subjective experience of time where you no longer can discuss if it's real or not. We know it's real, and we know these experiences are real. We have them.
Yes.
And yet they're subjective.
Right.
And then there is a third type of awareness where we call that sentient awareness, which has something to do with where we sense atmospheres or flickering signals. For example, a feeling told in a conversation. You can't quite say what it was or how it was, because if you focus on a particular detail of it, it loses its general global characteristic. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, for example, if you work with, for our inner work, but all, like moods are an important part of that. So we use, for example, these three awareness styles. We differentiate into these three awareness styles. And one of the key aspects of deep democracy is the concept that for a person, a couple, a group, or any system to be more whole or to be more complete is a democratic allowance of the experience of all these various awareness styles. So like, let's say, for example, you work with a group, be it a business, be it a group in conflict, whatever, but as a facilitator, you realize, well, the facts that these people are discussing is obviously very important. The subjective experiences behind it, like conflicts that they feel or their own feeling experience of what goes on in a moment, mm-hmm. is important. But the general group atmosphere, the mood that is present, is as important. And all those three parallel worlds deserve a representation at one point or other.
Okay, so that you would, in the course of such a meeting, you would invite people to explore and talk about all three levels of experiencing?
Yeah, we would like follow what a group does and then point out when these levels shift organically.
Mm-hmm.
And then help those various levels to complete themselves.
Yes.
So that's the basic theoretical concept. I don't know, it's a little abstract, so maybe you have to talk about practical things. But that's the basic theoretical framework that at least I come from when I work with groups or individuals.
Okay, well, that is helpful, and you're right. It is abstract, and it's still a little hard to get, you know, exactly what would distinguish it. There are a lot of different, for example, organizational development consultants out there who use a variety of trainings and approaches to organizational change and leadership training and so on. And so I'm still trying to understand what distinguishes your approach, what's difference, what's the magic sauce, so to speak, of your approach.
It's a great question. It's a great question. And world work, what I call it, world work is a paradigm that explains social transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And within that, and one of the complications is you're mentioning the various approaches and tools in terms of change management and organizational consultation that's out there. And I don't know, I often think, I'm not sure if it's true, but I often catch myself thinking that change management at this point doesn't really have an overarching scientific framework within you can have a conversation about what works and what doesn't work. Like take medicine, for example. At one point, I think not all that long ago, maybe, you know, a couple of hundred years ago, less, medicine didn't have an overarching paradigm. There was like people who were giving herbs, and they were like, the barbers were like doing surgery on people.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like all kinds of magic systems that people would think made people more healthy. There was religious concepts, how God and illness was connected with each other and how that had to be treated with astrology played a big role. But now medicine has settled plus minus in some sort of an accepted overall Western paradigm within which you have at least a common ground to discuss what is happening and where you can experiment and say, does this still fit in the paradigm or something like that. We don't really have that in organizational consultation or change management. So in my viewpoint, we are more back where we were in medicine in the 19th century, where you have like some of us are using herbs, some of us are using surgery, and we don't really have much in common to a common paradigm. We have a lot in common, but we don't have a common paradigm that allows us to have a conversation about what it is that we are doing. That's why, in my view, it is so hard to see what is different what these guys do from what these guys do and so on, because there are so many common elements in so many different approaches.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think so. I think there are a lot of common elements. For example, probably a lot of people subscribe to Maslow's hierarchy. A lot of people would subscribe to the idea that it's important to have open communication, to have a certain amount of transparency, that change is possible, even, you know. Uh-huh.
But look at Maslow's hierarchy, for example. Some of the U.S. foreign policy is based on Maslow's hierarchy.
That's hard to believe.
Really?
Well, okay. I'm not sure.
Now we're on a topic that is going to create some good sparks, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay, but let me say how I see it.
Yes.
Then I'll love to see how you see that. Well, but part of the general thinking of that's behind a lot of Western foreign policy is that you look at certain nations or regions and you think, so let's see what in that hierarchy of needs is not completely fulfilled here. And if we only go in there and help people to fulfill their basic needs, that will resolve the conflicts and the difficulties that we experience with them.
Okay, that makes
sense.
That's
deeply built into the Western mind frame, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see it really working all that well. So you can say Maslow's hierarchy of needs is in that sense an ethnic paradigm. It works within Western groups that share certain common values, who share a consensus reality about what's important in life and what life should be built on. But you go in another culture that doesn't share that consensus reality anymore, then you run into trouble. And this is where world work comes in.
Okay.
Because we now say, well, hierarchy of needs, very good. Hierarchy of spiritual values, very good too. Let's talk and let's learn from each other and let's sit in the fire and have these difficulties out and see how can we really connect or learn or grow and understand how we are both needed for a world to be complete.
Yes. Now, I saw on your website that, you know, we can talk about specifics because you've taken on some very challenging projects. For example, your website talks about facilitating conflict resolution sessions in many different environments, such as maximum security prisons, Yugoslavian refugee camps between Serbs and Croats, and standoffs between squatters and police elsewhere.
Right.
So let's talk about some of these examples.
Okay. Okay, you have anything in particular that you yourself... Because I've been thinking about you, of course, too.
Yeah,
and
go
I
ahead.
Know that's not, well, I've been thinking about you, too, and I thought the part that excited me most about this interview is there you are, my understanding, your background in clinical psychology.
Yeah.
And you create a radio. You create a radio station. That's a world work project, in my view. That I feel is a common thing that we both share. That I thought something in your mind must have been going on along the line, like we need more psychology, or it would be a good thing to give more psychological knowledge and understand more the role that psychology plays in the world at large, and that needs to go out there. And that's like definitely a project that wants to change the world.
Well, that's true. And you're a very good facilitator because you've seen me at a deep level, I think, when you see that I do have that impulse of hoping to, in a small way, you know, do some kind of transformation by making psychological insight and wisdom more widely available. So yes, I do think I'm doing a kind of world work there. But
so, I felt very moved by that. I just want you to know that.
Well,
I felt
thank
very
you.
Moved by that because I know there's not great riches that come out of that. Or
no, there aren't, and certainly that wasn't my motivation when I decided to do it.
So thank you for that. Well, somebody had to thank you, and I'm right here on the phone with you, so why not me?
Well, thank you. So talk to me then about these environments, maximum security prisons or the Yugoslav work that you did. Whatever pops out at you as a good example of how you walk into a difficult situation and help to bring about some sort of transformation.
Well, I'll get you up to date with what I'm doing recently, I think there is, for me, in my mind, also... They're probably all one part of the same one world. There is like, but in my mind, definitely, there is like one situation where, or that I work like in three areas now. One situation is where I'm doing conflict facilitation. Like, for example, the maximum security prison that's on my website shows a conflict between the guards and law enforcement part of the prison and the inmates. Or like the city of Zurich in Switzerland, where we had a big group process because of some tension in a particular area of Zurich, downtown Zurich, that involved punks and people, marginal people, like homeless people, the business community, and the Zurich police, who had like terrible problems with each other. So they have like different stakeholders in conflict that we go and we facilitate. So that's one area.
Mm-hmm.
And another area is I work with companies and organizations where we do use the exact same paradigm, but now in a different way, where we help people to align their various factions and develop strategies that are inclusive and at the same time effective. Inclusive always means, for me, more effective. And then the third thing we do is with the Deep Democracy Institute, where we have isolated three regions in the world, which is like the Middle East is one, and then East Asia, Kazakhstan, Chechnya, Kyrgyzstan is two, and the Saharan Belt and Sub-Saharan Africa is three, where we have a different approach, but the same idea behind, which is we go and facilitate or teach or learn together with these groups to help people, or to facilitate, help is the wrong word, but to facilitate a process where together with the local communities, for them to develop more their own leadership types, their own leadership paradigms, and their own facilitation skills.
Okay.
Because we think that conflict resolution doesn't work there, because that's not where it's at. So, like, take something like the Middle East, where I personally feel conflict resolution has brought a lot of good results, but not all the results that everybody who was involved hoped for. And part of that is a leadership issue in the background. And so we're trying to interfere with interfere into that whole process by adding and facilitating the leadership processes too.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about President Bush being over in the Mideast right now and trying to do some mediation, some facilitation there.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your advice to him, or if you were brought in to, you know, as a consultant into that situation, how would you approach it?
That's very good. That's very good. Well, I read this morning that he has told the Israeli prime minister that he has to get rid of the illegal settlements. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if the Israeli minister ever has thought about that himself, but I assume he has. And the reason he hasn't done it yet is not because he needed encouragement from an American president to do it. So I think that message, for example, is meant for the Arab world or for voters at home. And it's not really helping the region to go deeper into understanding their relationship to each other. So if anything, I think this kind of interventions doesn't help in the region for that America is necessarily seen as a credible force that is trying to go deeper and help the various groups to sort out their problems. Also have to say, at the same breath, I can't say that without saying that America has done a lot of good stuff in the Middle East, and so has Bush. So I'm not an anti-Bush person per se.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do see the credibility issue that you're talking about, because clearly we have our own interests, and so for anybody who's, you know, on either side of that conflict, they're going to have an eye not only to their interests but to what sorts of hidden agendas we might have as a country.
I think that one of the big issues, Palestine definitely is a big issue in the Middle East, and Palestine is partially used by a lot of various forces in the Middle East as a third party, but
yes.
I definitely think one of the problems is it's like a person in a sense, that Palestine, the Palestinians itself are in the middle of developing their own narrative about who they are in this given situation and what they can be proud of, and reconnecting back to their culture. And for example, the clashes between Fatah and Hamas, in my viewpoint, are an important process of that. And by by to begin with, embracing that reality as a needed process and then starting from there to help, I think definitely would be a more useful and more sustainable approach. It's a principle in world work is always to say we're not against war and conflict. Like we don't go to war with war, but we take it at face value as one, also painful and hopefully over time to develop relationship form with each other. But by to begin with saying, well, you guys are doing the wrong thing. You shouldn't have a war with each other. You already sort of make yourself, you paralyze yourself as someone who can really help. Because people feel that on the other side. They feel patronized by that, or they feel pathologized, which, if anything, actually helps the conflict to persist.
Now that's a unique and interesting point of view there, I think, when you say don't go to war with war. That's not a point of view I've heard anywhere else.
No.
Yeah, that's
how we differ, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We think that conflict, is including wars, is a relationship issue, can be viewed upon as a relationship issue between two sides, whom has to be understood and gone deeper for it to develop. I'll give you an example how this looks practically.
Yes, good.
I'm like facilitating Serbian-Croatian group in a refugee camp in Germany towards the end of the Yugoslavian war. And what happened was that there's a lot of people that left Yugoslavia and or the former Yugoslavia and ended up in various European refugee camps. And also, the refugee people tried to sort them according to ethnic identities. It didn't quite work like that because at the time, people were much against Serbians. So a lot of Serbians feared that they would be like oppressed or persecuted, so they tried to get into the Croatian camps. And as you can imagine, in the camp itself, a big discussion was who is really Serbian, who is not, and we know who is not, and who is Croatian, etc. So we have like a group process, an open forum with maybe 70 or 80 of these refugee groups who at the point it has gone so bad that the police is constantly there. And there's been a lot of violent interactions. We come in, and the people, to begin with, already are against us. They're against facilitation. And I remember starting out saying something about trying to be open to everything that's present and also open to conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And this man gets up, and he says, you say that. It's a trick to convince us that we should trust you.
Yeah.
But I don't trust you. You just say that. You don't really mean it.
And what did you say?
I remember I said, no, I mean it because I do mean it. And then the man says to me, well, let me tell you something. I want to kill my neighbor. I want to kill his wife. And I want to rape his daughter. And I want to do that now. And if I say that, are you still standing with me and say you accept it at face value? And I remember saying, yes, because that you want to do that must be part of your history. It doesn't come out of nowhere. And the guy starts to sob and weep and say, I wasn't like that. I had a family. It's horrible what that whole thing has done to me. And the whole process of revenge comes out. And that whole thing was like a 15, 20-minute interaction that changed that whole group, because on the other side, people generally came out and said, us too. And the horror of war came out about people who have normal, regular lives with families, and they're even peacefully minded people. And then in the war, a family member gets killed, another family member gets hurt, and you start to have to deal with two things. You have to start to deal with the pain of all of this, and you have to start to deal with the fact that you now, in a sense, become your terrible opponent, because all these feelings start to come up in you, and you now want to do the same thing onto the other. So we call that a ghost role, the meaning an unidentified role that is only being seen on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So by accepting that to begin with, you get much quicker and much deeper into the deeper underlying processes.
Oh, that's a wonderful story and a great example of the work that you're doing. It reminds me of work that Carl Rogers started doing towards the end of his life. I don't know if
you're aware. I don't know about that.
Oh yeah, he went to Ireland, for example, and I have a friend who goes to a Rogerian conference each year.
Uh-huh.
And they sit in a big circle. I don't think there's a leader, actually, but they sit in a big circle and they work things out. They start working it out in a large group. And so, for example, around the issues that have happened since 9/11 and a large contingent of British people and some of the anger and resentment that they've had towards the U.S. in terms of foreign policy came out in that group and was being worked through. So
it makes a lot of sense, because client-centered, call it client-centered, call it group-centered,
mm-hmm.
call it person-centered approaches definitely can be found in world work. So in that aspect, we are very Rogerian. You know, I never thought of it in these terms. And it's just really good to hear. That just makes absolute sense.
Yeah. One of the things I liked about what I saw on your website was your emphasis and embodiment of transparency, which is certainly a value that I hold as well. Mm. Is there anything you want to say about that, about transparency?
Yeah, transparency, in my viewpoint, is the coming fashion.
Mm.
I'm very optimistic about the planet, and I think that that over time, over these next 10, 15 years, transparency will be a big thing wherever you go. Because one of the reasons we are not transparent, well, the opposite of transparent means hiding. You don't say what you do and you hide it. And I don't know if you're familiar with the role ghost role. Do you know about the role ghost role and field principle in world work? Maybe I should say a couple of sentences
about that. I know a little bit about it only because I went onto your website. But for our listeners, yes, you can say something about that.
Well, one of the underlying concepts we use in world work is the concept of the field, the social field. It's similar like in a magnetic field, we also think a social field. We also think in terms of a social field, which means there is an organizing principle that aligns groups similar to, let's say, magnetic poles would align metal filings.
Sure.
And it's a concept that I think comes from the early 30s by, I think, Kurt Lewin. How do you say it in English? Kurt Lewin.
Yeah, people in English say Lewin, but Levine Lewin, would be the correct pronunciation. That's
so,
right.
So Kurt Lewin, and has been expanded in use now by a lot of different schools, and we use it too. One of the ways we use it is we look at groups, and we say, remember, consensus reality is an awareness style. There are aspects that groups identify with easily. They call it real. Like, let's say, for example, in politics, we look at what does the president do of a country. That's called consensus reality, because we all believe that the country is being, well, actually we don't all believe, but a lot of us obviously believe that the country is led by the president, and that's why so many people either hate the president or love the president. So that's one aspect. But then we also, we call that role, like, who is the president of the United States? At any given moment, you're going to ask 20 people, most of them will say, fortunately or unfortunately, President Bush. Now, you can say the president is also a ghost role, meaning that's a basic tendency in a group a leadership tendency in a group. And at any given moment, it's up to us to pick up that role also. So in a sense, the elected president really reflects where a culture or a nation or a group is in terms of their own development around leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So those things we call ghost roles. So we look at groups or a behavior of a group, and we think, okay, here is the behavior of that group. That's like a role. And that must be in response to another ghost role that is not visible yet. For example, the reason we are not transparent certainly has a lot to do with a ghost role. Let's take American politics, for example, that is very moralistic. So we have to try to look. You look at the presidential candidates now. You have to try. It's like an advertising campaign where you're trying to, everybody knows you only get half the truth. The same reason when you buy like a laundry detergent, you know it's only half the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody knows that. That's what advertising is all about. They're only telling you half the truth.
Right.
And I do it too. On my website, it only lists cases that went really well. I haven't listed the ones that didn't go well.
Good point.
You know, so I'm not better or different than anybody else in that respect.
Yeah.
So why we do that is because a ghost role, let's say a perfectionist on the other side, that makes us not transparent. But I think there is a change now, and these roles or these ghost roles that say you have to be like this and you have to be like this, I think are all in the middle of being changed. And I think that all of us and groups and companies will start to see that we are, in a sense, longing for more transparency. Truth is beautiful, and we all are longing for it. Mm-hmm. And if we finally have it, we're relieved by it. So I'm very optimistic in that area.
You know, that's probably a good place for us to wrap it up, only because we've run out of time here. I have some sense of, you know, how long we should hold our listeners. I had a lot more questions for you, so maybe we'll talk again sometime down the line.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I would love it. I love being interviewed by you, and or talking to you is a better way of saying that. And I think
likewise,
that you are, like, amazing. You know, usually interviewers, as I'm sure you know, there's two things about interviewers. A lot of professional interviewers are looking for something that creates some sort of a negative buzz in order for their, like the news, in order
right.
to give their thing a little bit more, you know, oomph or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think you're an incredible supportive person, and I love it how you got me at 10 o'clock in the morning to all my parts that are excited about what I'm doing.
That's
that
great.
Would be possible.
Well, Dr. Max Schubach, thank you so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you. All the best to you for your project.
Yeah, thank you, and with yours too. I hope you enjoyed this conversation on world work with Dr. Max Schubach. His example of the difference between objective and subjective time was particularly relevant in as much as I found we ran out of time, and I still had a number of topics I wanted to discuss with him. For example, I wanted to have him speak more about what he referred to in our discussion as deep democracy, and he's also written about the importance of deep diversity. There's a reference to Taoism on his website, and I wanted to get into that with him. And then a substantial body of his work has to do with coaching high-level executives in some high-profile corporations. I wanted to explore how he got into that work and how he sees the process of leadership development going and what he considers to be the hallmarks of good leadership. And I know he has some interesting views on such topics as globalization and corporate ethics and so on. So I might need to have him back on the show to explore these topics in greater depth. Please let me know if you'd be interested in that. He has two websites you might want to explore. They are www.maxfxx.net and www.deepdemocracyinstitute.org, which is a nonprofit that he's put together. And I'll put URLs in the show notes as well.
Let us all come together to see what we can find. Shrink Wrap Radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Let us all remember what you seek is what you find. Dr. Dave is here to remind you it's all in your mind.
Did you notice that that transition was shorter than before? By popular demand, I made the transitional tune much shorter, so I hope you didn't skip over it. Maybe the shorter length will work for those who said it was too long. I let go of my ego attachment to it enough to cut out a few verses. I spent all day yesterday at Mac World in San Francisco checking out all the new toys from Apple Computer, and I'm thinking I may go back down there tomorrow because there'll be a podcaster meetup late in the afternoon, so it might be fun to gather together with other Macintosh-based podcasters there. Be sure to check out my latest podcast interview on Wise Counsel. It's with Dr. David H. Barlow of Boston University, who's been described by one person I know as the Sigmund Freud of the cognitive behavior therapy movement. This guy is an academic mega superstar with over 500 publications to his credit and more honors than a Soviet Supreme Commander. His primary focus has been on anxiety disorders, and despite his prestige, he was very personable and open. I think it was a good interview. You'll find it at www.wisecounselpodcast.com. Has anybody ordered any t-shirts off our site? There are many colors, styles, and sizes to choose from. As I've mentioned before, I don't make any money on these, but I'd love to think there are people out there with them. If you bought one, let me know, and let me know what you think of it. At last, we have a new listener on our Frapper map. Let me welcome to our community Nancy from Toronto, who writes, "Great show, still catching up with past episodes." So welcome, Nancy, and there's a lot to catch up on. And you can go all the way back to number one in our archives on the Shrink Wrap Radio site. You'll find them listed by month over on the left. And once again, let me remind you that Jerry Trumbull and I will do a live call-in, chat-in, blog talk radio show on Sunday, February 3rd at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. Do join us if you can by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/shrinkwrapradio. And of course, the sponsors for this show are Podshow and GoDaddy, and you can purchase the domain name shrinkwrapradiofan.com by using the code SHRINK3 at checkout from GoDaddy.
Hi, my name is Judy from County Cork, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Judy from County Cork. Before I go on to some emails, you should know that there's been some really good activity in the comments area on our website. I don't always have time to go in and comment on the comments, but there have been some very active folks there making friends by sharing their thoughts and reactions to the episodes. I encourage you to join the fun. Okay, here's the first email. "Hello, Dr. Dave. My name is Alex, and I'm from Germany. Only recently I discovered your website, and I'm fascinated. The fact that there are so many shows that I've missed provides me with the opportunity to listen to one or two new shows per day. The reason I'm writing to you is that I want you to know that you reach more people through your show than that are listening to it. I'm a teacher and a Gestalt therapist, so I work with people, and your interviews have direct effects on how I deal with people because there are so many inspirations and fresh ideas that enrich my life. The latest example is the interview about making dolls. I tried the idea that very evening I listened to the show with one of my own clients, and it worked very well for both of us. So you reach your goal to make the world a little bit better through what you do, as long as better means that you help people to grow and to change their reality so that they live in peace with themselves and with other people. At least that's part of what it means for me. So thank you for that. I still have one request. I was very interested in the show about process work, especially as it is connected to Gestalt so closely. I would be very happy to learn more about that, and as you announced about the early days of Gestalt and how healing works. Well, maybe more than one request. However, thanks for what you are and what you do. I keep listening. Yours, Axel. Axel, thanks so much for that very encouraging email. I'm really glad to hear that you were able to put that doll work into such direct practice, and I'm taking the liberty of forwarding this email to Jerry Olson, who I know will be very gratified to hear about the impact of her work on your work as well. And I'm sure you'll be happy to discover that as you're listening to this email, of course, here's another show on process work, this time world work, and we'll have another one coming up in August, as I've said before, with Arnie Mandel and his wife. And if you do a search on our site, you'll find some past shows on Gestalt, and there will be more shows on Gestalt in the future, rest assured. Here's the next email. It says, "Hi, Dr. Dave. Wow, I've just listened to the latest show, number 132, and was excited to hear you read and comment on my email. Sometimes I listen to your shows at night if I have trouble sleeping. Well, that sure woke me up. Thanks for forwarding my email to Brother Bernard from the Shrinkwrap Radio website. I clicked onto his website. He has a lot of good stuff on there. I read some of his articles, which I found very interesting, particular one on how he integrates his Catholicism with his interest in Eastern spirituality. I hope my feedback about Shrinkwrap Radio was helpful. Once again, keep up the great work, Richard." And Richard is a teacher in the UK, as I recall. And Richard, I may have woken you up again if you're listening at night. And of course, Richard was referring to the interview with Brother Bernard, who teaches Qigong and Tai Chi and does Eastern medicine. And wonderful person, wonderful interview. And Richard, your encouragement is really appreciated. And with that, we're actually going to wrap it up for today. You can send your email to shrink at Shrinkwrap Radio, and you can leave voicemails on the site, and our name there is Shrink Pod. You can use my Chingo to leave a voicemail or a transition, and you can do the same on our phone voicemail at 206-337-0622. Thanks again to Dr. Max Schupbach for enlightening us about his approach to world work. My next interview will be with Dr. Liza Ravitz, a psychologist who is both a certified Jungian analyst with the San Francisco Jung Institute and a sand play therapist. It should be a great follow-on to the doll work episode that we had last time. You won't want to miss it. Until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind. We'll be right back.